Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Next Brave Thing podcast. Today, I have a returning guest, Kristen Peach. Thanks for coming back on.
Thank you so much, Ella, for having me back. I'm like ridiculously excited to chat today. It's going to be so good.
I know. We just love catching up. Mm. So basically, everyone, I wanted to get Kristen on because, especially coming back to Australia, it's been a huge culture clash transition for me. And so having a fellow Aussie that I can just, you know, even if it's in our long voice notes to each other, just like you are the person that I'm like, oh, Chris just gets me. And, you know, I think the feeling's mutual, but absolutely. I was like, yeah, I was kind of like, oh, I need to get you back on the podcast to talk about this topic of living wholehearted. You also joined my wholehearted group coaching course, which was really so fun to have you on there. And I wanted to have you on because we talk about this stuff a lot. And it'd be fun to go back and forth to talk about, like, have different examples of what it means to live wholehearted. And I think if I was to like kick it over to you, because we're talking about healing, integration, living authentically, courage, faith, all of those wonderful things. And for you, like if I could kick off with the first question, like how would you describe wholeness, like, and living wholehearted, like in your own language?
Okay. You know, I think for me, wholeness probably, it's actually simple and really hard. Yeah. I think it's like a pulling back to recognizing that who you are at, like who you're created to be at the core of you is just by being you are bringing value with who you mm-hmm. are. And I think that when we're living whole and living from wholeness, it's a knowing of that, knowing of yourself and knowing of your story. And you are just being who you are. Mm-hmm. And like, that sounds like really cliche, being who you are. But I think that if there's like a performative being real, like a performative real, and then there's like a real. And I think that when we're living in wholeness, it's at the core of us, we like ourselves, we understand who we are, we know who we are, and we're living from that place, and there's not striving or our guards aren't up, and we're willing to embrace the pain that comes with that to experience living from a place that's really genuine. And that would be probably how I would describe it in many words.
And I think that like being whole, well, being perfect is like performative and very others focused. Like how do I come across even, I think even in this self-development world, we've become so performative even in our emotional health, like how, you know, and I love that you say it's very simple, but it's also really hard.
Yeah, because it actually really does require you to be open.
Yeah.
And I think that that requires you to let your guards down. And like given that we are, you know, our design is that we would be survivors and we've got this like system that's designed for survival, we so subconsciously have little guards and little protectors and things that are there all the time shielding us from pain. And I think if we're really truly wanting to live wholeheartedly, we, like Brené Brown talks about, you can't do it without vulnerability. And at the core, vulnerability is like a willingness to experience the pain that comes with life. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that when I think of like wholehearted, it's like almost like childlike, not childish, childlike in the fact that you are open to emotions like wonder and awe and hope. And like, they are really vulnerable emotions, because I think it's a lot easier to live thinking I'm going to expect bad things and then I won't be disappointed, or I won't, you know, rather than being like, I'm going to have hope, or I'm going to believe the best of this next season, or I'm going to believe that the best of my spouse, you know, I'm going to see the good in things. I think that because that opens us to pain, because inevitably we'll be let down, we'll be hurt, all those things do happen. But when we live from a wholehearted place, we're opening ourselves up to the full range of emotional experiences so that we can experience joy. Because when we're blocking ourselves off by going, I don't want to experience pain, so I'm going to shield up all the time and just have these little shields so that I don't get this feeling of disappointment that really hurts, we also then don't get the experience of awe and wonder and joy and all the other things that come when we are allowing ourselves to be vulnerable and open. So I think when we live whole, it's kind of like how children live from who they are, you know, when they're really young and small, and they experience wonder and joy and pain, and they're pretty genuine. They're not trying to perform. They're not trying to show a different, like you watch a 3-year-old, they're not thinking about what other people think. They're just being who they are. And so when I think of wholeheartedness or living whole, I think it's like that. It's a heart that's like that. And it feels very different to be performatively real than it does to be actually wholehearted inside of your body.
Yeah, yes. Oh my gosh. And it's, I think both of us have gone through, it almost takes like a rock bottom or a death or some sort of like moment where you realize I've been playing by rules and I can't play those rules anymore. Mm. Like whether it's perfectionism, people pleasing, we have so many people are in burnout. And that's why I love kind of meeting with people, because it's about reconstructing your life so it's built on a foundation of love and safety, and rather than this performative, I have to earn and I have to prove myself. There's like this purity that comes. I want to go through the 10 guideposts for wholehearted living. And I'd love to unpack what's resonating with you in this season and how you're navigating these guideposts, because it's so helpful to hear how other people process them. But I'll run through them again really quick. So number one is cultivating authenticity, letting go of what people think. Two is cultivating self-compassion, letting go of perfectionism. Three, cultivating a resilient spirit, letting go of numbing and powerlessness. Four, cultivating gratitude and joy, letting go of scarcity and fear of the dark. Five is cultivating intuition and trusting faith, letting go of the need for certainty. Six is cultivating creativity, letting go of comparison. Seven, cultivating plan rest, letting go of exhaustion as a status symbol and productivity as self-worth. Eight, cultivating calm and stillness, letting go of anxiety as a lifestyle. Nine, cultivating meaningful work, letting go of self-doubt and supposed to. 10 is cultivating laughter, song and dance, letting go of being cool and always in control. There's so many there.
We could cultivate,
like even as I was reading them, I'm like, oh, I'm learning that in this season. But so you feel free to kind of mention a few if you want, but what sort of resonates, let's unpack how you are integrating this into your life.
Sure. So I think like at a glance, I've got them in front of me. What jumps out, authenticity, I think, has been the journey that I have gone on in the last probably 3 to 4 years. Just I have always been handing my ball of worth to things outside of myself. And so the journey that I have been on, as I've been probably moving towards being more wholehearted after my big rock bottom that you just said, you know, it does often take a major shakeup of your life to kind of reevaluate these things. Authenticity for me has been a huge part of that. And it probably, if I had to pick a core value now for me, authenticity might be the one that I would choose if I had to narrow it down to one, even though that would be really hard. So cultivating authenticity, definitely. Cultivating self-compassion would be the other one, because I just don't think you can live wholehearted without compassion for yourself. If you don't have self-compassion, you're probably living, you're living holding a gun at your own head every day. Mm-hmm. And that isn't a wholehearted way to be. So it is a big shift if you've not been a self-compassionate person to cultivate a kindness towards yourself and understanding of yourself. Like, that's deep work. It doesn't just, mm-hmm. you don't just go, oh, I'll just be nice to myself. Like, I think that it's a practice. It's going against what feels really natural to you if it's something you've never done.
Actually, I'll just jump in. Like, for you, for the audience, like, how, because I will speak about it in a session with someone mm-hmm. and they'll be like, it's not fully clicking. And mm-hmm. I'm like, it actually takes a long time. Mm-hmm. But for you, how long do you think it took for that to click for you?
12 months.
Yeah, I was going to say a year.
Yeah.
Of consistency in practice with it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that was like, I was doing courses. I was listening to like 5 podcasts a day. Like, I was like, just like, I was in this big season of my life needs an overhaul. And so I was like drenching myself in this stuff, and it still took me 12 months, because I think just to hear it repeatedly and be like, oh, okay. And then to start to put it into practice, and it feels so weird, and you're kind of like, I don't know if I really believe in this mumbo jumbo when you're doing it. And then I don't know, something shifts inside of you, and it's like your eyes get open and you see yourself through this lens of kindness, and all the criticisms and all the judgments and all the things that have existed to protect you from all the pain that you've had through your life lift, and you experience the deep pain of all of that feeling that wells up inside of you, but something just changes. But I think it's the practice of it, and it's the like cultivation of it that shifts it. And I'd say 12 months before I felt like self-compassion is a practice that is like and more of a thing that I see and can do and can like lean towards without feeling weird about it or feeling clunky about it.
Yeah. Because there can be a lot of even theological blocks around being compassionate towards yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's because there's a surface level understanding of it. But I think when you start really cultivating it, mm-hmm. you really see how you being kind to yourself becomes the most generous parent, the most generous spouse.
Yes.
Like, because it takes time to. Yes. Integrate it.
Absolutely. And I think because I love a deep dive, if like I'm not going to be self-compassionate just because the person on the podcast told me to be self-compassionate, like I want to know, well, why would I be self-compassionate? That sounds like I'm giving myself, like I know I definitely thought, well, isn't that just giving yourself a free pass for bad behavior? Like, shouldn't you feel bad? And so then it's a question of, well, what is shame versus what is guilt? So there's a big deep dive in that too, you know, like what does the research say about shame? Like if we're not being self-compassionate, we're being self-critical, and that voice is the voice that we're hearing all the time, then there's probably shame at the root of that. And shame is very destructive. And if that judgment is turned on me, it's probably turned on other people. So then I'm pretty critical of others. So then I'm critical of myself. I'm critical of other people. I'm waving around a judgment stick, whacking it on other people sometimes and whacking it on myself the rest of the time. And so I think when we cultivate compassion, it's not pity and it's not a free pass. It actually when you truly cultivate it, it enables you to take ownership because you're not attaching shame to all the mistakes that you're making. You can see it through a lens that goes, I'm just like every other human. I make mistakes, and this one was a doozy. And I'm going to be with me and not abandon myself, because when we are self-compassionate, we're not self-abandoning. And I was a chronic self-abandoner for my whole life. So cultivating compassion towards myself was really started from seeing that I was worthy to not be dropped like a hot potato when I didn't measure up to whatever standard I subconsciously thought was there. Which took, you know, that probably took 6 months just to believe that I shouldn't be dropped like a hot potato before you start cultivating actual inner dialogue that is compassionate. I hope that makes sense.
But yeah, that's so good. Yeah. And so I love that you said there's a deep dive in this, and I think that that's like part of the, it's a wrestle to kind of actually learn how to be compassionate.
It is. And worth the wrestle. So like.
Worth it. Yeah.
Absolutely worth it. Mm. Worth it fully. Very much. Like I can't, without self-compassion, I don't actually know where I'd be right now. I think it's just
well, so and I powerful. Think to your point, it's like when you go through a rock bottom or your life just falls apart, there's so much judgment about like, well, if I had have done this better, I wouldn't be in this position. And if I, you know, like there's so much telling off versus like that wise perspective of like, oh, I'm learning a lesson from this hard moment. Mm-hmm. But there's like a, why don't I judge myself to prevent myself from doing this again or experiencing this again? And something that you said in my course, because I got you to kind of speak into what self-compassion is, and something that you said was a phrase that really helped you. Do you want to share what you, do you remember?
No, do you remember?
You said, because we were talking about statements of self-compassion.
Yeah.
And because we can talk high level what self-compassion is, and then actually saying like, these are the phrases that help bring compassion and peace. And you said one of yours is like, you make sense.
Yes.
That makes sense that you would do that. So do you want to expand on that?
Yes. I think that the way that we are as humans, there's so many reasons why we show up the way that we do. You know, our story, our history, our family of origin, our childhood, the experiences that we've had, the way we've been shown love and compassion through our lives, plus all the pains that we've had, we formulate inside of our subconscious the responses that we're kind of going to be like the foundation for how we move through life moving forward to try to prevent the pain from recurring in our lives. So then that creates big mess when we're in relationships with people, when we're faced with things, and when that subconscious stuff is like driving the car, and then we make a mistake and then we judge ourselves for it, and we get really frustrated and we think like, what is wrong with me? Because at surface level, you're looking at it going, why would I do that? Why did I do that? That's so crazy. But you're just whacking yourself over and over again, like for something that's actually intrinsically there. And you wouldn't whack a small child for falling over when they're learning to walk. And I think that it's seeing that there is, like, it actually makes sense. It makes sense why you blew up then. It makes sense why you wanted to retreat in that moment. It makes sense why you couldn't get your words out. Like, you have gone through XYZ, your history has taught you XYZ, and your responses now at a like base level, at a subconscious level, are protecting you. So it makes sense why you've shown up that way, even if you don't actually know why it's made sense. And I think before I, like, you do years of therapy, that maybe then you start to kind of go, I can connect the dots here. But before then, when I was learning self-compassion, just knowing it actually does make sense, even if I don't know why right now,
mm-hmm.
was the most compassionate thing that I could say to myself. So that was one of my kind of avenues in, just to like put my hand on my heart and say, it makes sense. I can't see why. I can't see what it is, but it does. And that was a very compassionate thing, because the opposite of that is, what is wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not compassion. And that shuts down any chance of moving through wholeheartedly and open and taking ownership, because you've got shame then. You're not going to take ownership for the messes you've made, because if you take ownership and it's bad and you're bad and something's wrong with you, then you're just taking ownership and admitting that you're the worst. I'm the worst thing that ever existed. I'm defunct. Yeah. I'm default. There's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
When it actually makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it's not a free pass. You don't go, well, it makes sense, so I can do it if I want. It makes sense. So I'm going to be able to work through it and heal it and bring God into this place that's driving this. It will take me time, but there's not something wrong. I'm not broken. I'm not faulty. I'm not the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I just have pain that needs healing, and it makes sense that I'm showing up like this.
Yeah. Mm. And it's like you get less defensive or proving. Mm. Like it's almost like, because what we want to do is prove and explain why we do this. Yeah. And it's more a settling into like, actually, I make sense, and I'm learning to feel more safe in my body, so I don't lash out.
Yes.
You know, so I don't get rage, or I don't numb, you know, like, and I think, so even you saying like, oh, it makes sense that you're like this, because often we'll get a revelation of like behavior that's not so ideal in our life. Mm. And then we'll be like, why am I still struggling with this?
Mm.
And so the reframe of that is like, it makes sense you're still struggling with this, because you have been doing this behavior a long time.
Yeah.
And it's changing our behavior takes time.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's a whole neural pathway. Like the way I like to imagine it is like, you've got like these well-worn neural highways that are like pathways in your brain that are like big three-way highways. And then you're trying to like dig a little new track with like a fork and change the way that you behave. And for a while, the cars are just going to keep funneling down that highway, even when you see the highway and know that that's not the best, quote unquote, best way to go. But while you've got judgment and criticism, it's just going to be really hard to dig that new road. And I think the compassion piece, it just enables like, yeah, it enables that whole new pathway to start to evolve and change, because you've got compassion, because you'll just keep going down that highway for a while. It just takes, these things do take time. They just do.
Yeah. Hence why it takes a year.
Yeah. A year just for self-compassion, like let alone the rest. I think it's all a lifetime, isn't it? It's a lifetime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Are there any one of the else of the guideposts that sort of jump out to you? Yeah.
The one about cultivating rest and play has been huge for me personally in the last 12 months, just recognizing the treadmill is not, the life treadmill is just not, it's not it. Like it's just it's just not it. And it's not allowing me to actually live in who I am, because I'm too exhausted. I'm too strung out. I'm too burnt out. I'm outside of my window of tolerance all the time. And unless I'm really deliberate about cultivating play and rest, I can't be authentic, because I'm strung out and reactive. And I think when I'm deliberate about protecting rest, that it gives you bandwidth for the difficult moments in life, and then you kind of have pause and you're not as reactive, and so you can show up with choice and a bit more aligned to your own value system than maybe what you would be otherwise. So that one has been a really big one for me recently.
Yeah. And I think it takes, because the part of it is letting go of exhaustion as a status symbol and productivity as self-worth. Mm. Because our world so celebrates productivity. Mm-hmm. And so it really is like learning how to rest is mm-hmm. not, you know, you're not given a round of applause for that.
So, no.
So it's really like coming back to securing in a real, in your true identity yes. to be able to rest.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah. I think like I probably had a bit of a burnout at the end of last year that made me yeah. go, I got to the place of like, I don't even care anyway, like the flatness.
Yeah, totally.
yeah. And like I have nothing left in the tank and it was a forced rest. But then I recall because probably I've been, this has all sort of been now the way that I view my life. When things do happen like that, it's not just like I'm at the mercy of the experience. I'm a lot more like, oh, what is this? What can I learn? What can I choose? I'm looking for choice yeah. now that I live from a place where I want to be aligned. I want to be wholehearted. I want to be authentic. I don't want to be a victim to the circumstances outside of myself like I chose to be for the first 4 years of my life. I want to see where my agency lies. And so when I was reaching burnout, rather than just being like, this is all too hard and the life sucks and there's too much to do and all the things that I probably once would have said. It's too hard having 3 kids. It's too hard having a job. It was like, well, what can I do differently now? Because clearly here I am in this experience of feeling burnt out. And like that brings me probably back to the fact that acceptance, I think, is a huge part of living wholehearted. Not being in resistance to what is. And yeah. I know that there's a type of therapy called acceptance and commitment therapy that a lot of therapists that I love to listen to use. And it is the fact that, like, well, what is here right now? Right now, this burnout, this overwhelm, this exhaustion is here with me today. It's here. And so in light of this, what small choice can I make now? Yeah. And I think that that's where you're taking back your agency and you are realigning, because life is always a balancing act. It's like a seesaw. You're not going to go, I want to live wholehearted. And so I'm going to just be 100% forevermore wholehearted. Life is life. There are things that come that throw everything into turmoil outside of your control. And I think living wholehearted then in the light of that is being in acceptance that this is here, and then reorienting back to, well, what do my values say? If I value being authentic and this stretching season is like, I feel I can't be because I'm just so reactive all the time and I want to live from my values, I'm going to need to like drop a few balls, put some things down for this time to protect my rest. And that's a choice that I can make. And it may not be easy. I might be letting people down. I might be facing the fact that I'm a bit people pleasing in this season of my life and I don't like to say no or whatever it might be, you know. But I think that, that play and rest is really important. And that acceptance of difficulty
yeah.
and is just a part of being wholehearted, a huge part.
Yes. And I love that you bring this up, because so many people are in survival mode. And I realize I have spent a lot of my life being in survival mode, whether that's with finances or navigating really difficult relationships and feeling like you're constantly putting out fires. Mm. And I love that you're talking about this acceptance and then learning how to get your agency back in it. Because I think survival mode, it feels like you're constantly dog paddling and you can never you can never find stable ground, like, you know. And so what advice would you give to people, yeah, who are in survival mode? Yeah. Just to feel, and you've kind of mentioned it, of like learning how to sort of make adjustments and shift to find agency. I love that you use that word. Could you tell us a little bit more about agency? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like people who are really like just keeping their head above water right now.
You know, I think that one of the things that that you probably need to understand before going into agency is that when we're under stress, when our nervous system is under stress, we have these responses that are just the way that we are wired to survive. And I think that, like, before anything, there's a lot of compassion to have if you are in survival mode, because if your body is going into just get through, just survive, your bandwidth is like blown out. Like, you don't actually have much bandwidth to be able to even really think about what to do next. You're just on that like funneled road, and you're just running, and you've got nothing left. I remember once I talked to my therapist about the fact that I felt like I was on a tightrope on one of those like single wheel bikes, and I was juggling things, and there was crocodiles in the water under me snapping, and like I wasn't allowed to drop what I was juggling. Like, I was just feeling so stretched and so strung out, and like, and then I remember as I was telling her this story, I just had like, I felt like God just said to me, like, if you just look to the left, you're actually next to like a pier. Just hop off the bike. And I just remember being like, what? Like, I can hop off the bike. Like, I think when you're in survival, you don't even see, you can't see the forest for the trees. And so that, and I think because we're trying so hard to get to safety, you're like on that bike, pedal towards the safety that you think's ahead, but it doesn't occur. And I think that part of what actually brings us to safety is releasing the control. Because while you're on the bike pedaling, you think there's a semblance of control. If I can just pedal faster, if I can just juggle better, if I can just do all these things, I will get to where I need to be, and then I'll experience rest. And then, but there's an element of like, okay, I have to accept that I'm in complete overwhelm. I'm going to let myself feel the fact that this is just a lot. And if you're me, then that will come with a lot of tears. I think my heart's far too close to my eyes, but like it ends up being like this sense of recognition, of turning inward. That's that self-compassion of like, this is hard. I'm exhausted. This is a lot. And just that acceptance and acknowledgement, and then recognizing like, I'm just going to hop off the bike, I think. Yeah. And that, like, you know, that can look really different. And I think there's a lot of compassion for the fact that that does come then with probably pain, and that would be why you're pedaling so hard. Because if you're hopping off the bike, you might be faced with uncertainty, faced with a loss of control, faced with disappointing people, faced with all kinds of things that could come with that. And I guess that's why there's 10 guideposts for wholehearted living, because if we're cultivating self-compassion and all these other things, then when it comes time for us to maybe have to step into cultivating play and rest, or like doing these things, then we have the other things in our toolkit to be able to do it, and being able to tolerate the discomfort that would come. Like, there will be pain. And I think when you're in survival mode, it's this real deep avoidance of pain, and maybe a subconscious belief that you can outrun the pain if you just go harder, if you just go faster, if you just don't like take your eye off the ball while you're like slowly just depleting everything in your life force is being depleted from you. And so seeing agency doesn't have to be like a drastic change. It can be like the tiniest little thing. And I think starting with a question like, what do I need right now, is a really good place to start, because you could be at home thinking about the millions of things that you need to do on your to-do list, or the pressure that you're feeling at work, or that really draining relationship, and I should do this and I should do that. And, you know, I think if your brain is saying the word should, there's probably a judgment that's going on inside of you that you could probably challenge. I think if every time I'm moving into a should, it's like a bit of a red flag for me.
Yeah.
That there's something external to maybe my authentic self, or yeah, like living wholehearted, that's going on. Because if it's a should, it's usually because I have a belief around either what other people will think if I don't, or I don't know. Yeah. Like I think a should's a bit of a red flag. If you're feeling like, yeah, I should, I can't put this down, I can't stop. But yeah, taking it back to that agency question, like it could just be, you don't have to change everything. You don't have to get off the bike today, right now. But what do you need in this moment? Maybe your body could just use like a really nice hot shower. And I think that if you're going to take a choice to do something with agency, that is to do the opposite of like burnout or survival mode, take a moment to tell yourself that that is what you're doing. So rather than just like getting in the shower absentmindedly, you might say to yourself, I see you need a bit of a moment. I'm going to take you, Chris, and give you a nice warm shower. So you talk to yourself like you would a friend or a child that you can see that's in distress. And as you take those tiny steps, you actually start to build up trust with yourself. Because I think if you're a self-abandoner, your self-trust is like obliterated. And that, for me, was one of the biggest things. I had no self-trust. I'd been self-abandoning my whole life. And as I was healing and transitioning into this, like what I'd now say is like more whole way of living, I had to build back trust through all these tiny little practices where I acknowledged what I needed. And even that was hard in the beginning, to just acknowledge, hey, I need to rest, and to allow myself to say to myself, I need to stop, I need to rest, I need a breather. That was even hard. But once I was voicing that, I think the step to say, I see you, to yourself, I see you. I see you need to stop, and I'm going to let you stop now. We're going to stop. So you're talking to yourself from this place of like, I've got you. I've got you. I see you. You matter. What your needs are, they actually matter. And when you cultivate that like inner world that is caring of those things, the core of who you are, like your beauty and your like what you really bring, gets to blossom, because it's not in survival anymore. Mm-hmm. It can like sit and trust in the fact that it is safe, because the safety comes within your body. And I think that you can either hold a gun at your own head, or you can put the gun down and say, even though everything around me is swirling and there are a lot of needs and I have, you know, kids and a spouse and a job and a mortgage and whatever it might be that you have, pressure, I am on my own team, and I'm going to acknowledge that I right now need a cup of tea, and I'm going to make a cup of tea, and I'm going to sit with my cup of tea, and I'm going to say, this cup of tea is for me, because I acknowledge that I need rest, and I'm going to honor that. And I think that agency can just be tiny shift. It's a tiny practice that as you practice it, it just becomes again, that neural pathway digs in, and you suddenly, it's an easier road to take, so that when it is a big thing, like saying no when someone asks you to do something that you don't have the capacity for, you've worn a path inside that's a bit more worn in of agency over the small things so that it's ready when it's a big thing.
When it's a big thing. Mm. That's so beautifully said. And I love that you've broken down survival mode. And I just felt like, oh, so many of my people listening, you're probably in that place of survival mode. Mm. And almost like, yeah, you can listen to even good podcasts or sermons to try and like help you. But because you're so dysregulated, you can't really absorb what's happening. And I think a lot of when I've been in survival mode, it's been a lot of self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
Like I kind of, it's all on my shoulders, and we can have resentment for other people and we can feel like we're not being seen by mm-hmm. people or valued by people around us, and no one cares about us because we're mm-hmm. drowning. And I love that you talk about like that simple little moment of like, Ella, you need a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And like just that level of kindness and care mm. can just, oh, like
yeah.
settle something.
That's because it's so, like, I may not be seen by anyone, but I see yeah. me. I see me.
Yeah.
And I, yeah. and it sounds simple, but I think that change, like that was huge for me, that understanding of attunement, and that mm. I was really desperately needing attunement from everyone outside of me.
Yeah.
Not and like constantly self-abandoning and criticizing myself. But like if we can attune to ourselves, we actually know ourselves better than anybody. I know what mm-hmm. I need. I don't need to mm-hmm. like try and make you understand. Like I know. I can just turn inward and put my hand on my heart and go, oh my gosh, I just need to like take a breath, or oh my gosh, I just need a shower. And then I can say, okay, girl, let's do that. Let's just do that. And yeah, like it's a powerful thing because you then are not alone. It's a weird thing to think you can be with yourself, but you really can.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, because I can imagine like your husband is saying, hey, you need to go have a shower, just relax. Like, and you might be like, oh, I can't do that because I've got 10 more things to do.
Yeah.
And he's trying to let care come to you, but mm. you can't even receive that care.
No.
And even like, we can't even hear God's care
no.
for us, because we've created, it's almost like the everything around us has become God. It's become bigger. We've like, you know, we're thinking, yeah, all those other voices, whether it's yeah. religious spirit or whatever. And I think like when you, like you're the gatekeeper of love in your life. So when you turn towards yourself and give care, mm-hmm. it opens up. You're able to actually see when your husband's caring for you or yes. when God's caring for you, because yes. you took a moment.
Yes. And I really think good. Like it is almost like you're in this vortex, isn't it, when you are yeah. in survival mode.
Yes.
And that, like, I keep thinking of that. You can't see the forest for the trees. So, you yeah. know, it's not, there might only be one important task that needs to be done, but in your mind, there's like so many, and you yes. can't prioritize, and you're trying to do yes. all the things, and then no one's helping you, and you're yelling at everybody. Like, I'm talking to myself, like, I am a yeah. mother and a wife, and this yeah. is like yeah. a common experience for me
yeah.
where yeah. I'm like, why is no one seeing all the things that need to be done? It like no one's helping me. And then like, you know, if my husband were to say, we'll just go have a shower, the rage I would feel would be like, well, I can't. And if you would just get up off your butt and help me, then maybe I could. Like, you know, you don't see the yeah. forest for the trees in survival, and you want someone to swoop in and rescue you, and then you yes. build resentment when no one is doing that
yes.
and you aren't seeing your agency in that, because really we have to release people from being our saviors, and we have to stop seeing ourselves as victims of external circumstance, because life is hard, things do happen, pain is here, overwhelm is here, and I think that is just part of the human experience. But if we want to live free and wholehearted, we have to embrace the idea that I see me Mm-hmm. And I'm going to allow myself to maybe not meet the unrealistic perfection expectation that I have of a clean house every day or home cooked meals every night or whatever, you know, whatever it might be. I'm going to let that ball go because it's just a gun that I'm holding at myself.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's and
so threatening.
Yes. So like I'm threatening myself. I'm holding myself hostage when I could just put this thing down. And that does, it does require a level of like self-awareness and willing to explore maybe why I'm holding the gun at my own head. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, that's why it's so vulnerable to live wholehearted.
Yeah.
Because you're gonna lean into all of those things that are happening rather than stay on the treadmill. But pick your pain. I think you have to recognize
pick your pain. That's good.
If you're on that, if you're on that exhausted treadmill, you're still choosing the treadmill. And it is a horrible feeling. It's a horrible feeling. Yeah.
Totally. This is so rich and it kind of helps me just all this conversation. And I love that you talk about being wholehearted is vulnerable because it's often messy and clunky.
Absolutely.
And something that I think is important to talk about is paradox and tension. Even it's really interesting, like you and I are both followers of Jesus. And if you read the Bible, there is so much paradox and tension inside the Bible. Like in one scripture, like Jesus is saying, ask for what you need. In another scripture, he's saying, don't ask for what you need because your Father in heaven knows what you need. Yeah. So us in our religious black and white like thinking are like, well, can get really thrown off by that because we want certainty and we want control. But it's kind of like there's, you know, there's so much paradox even in, and I'm just using scripture for an example, but then it ties into like concepts in emotional health is like, you know, the paradox of like, you have to die in order to live. You have to be generous, give away to receive. And like the first is the last, you know, there's so many kind of like upside down theories. And I think that even coming into wholehearted is really, really learning how to and why it requires us to dig deep and go deep. So we're not living this surface level. I'm just going to do and say the right thing that everyone applauds at. Like it requires deep work because paradox is such a rumble.
Yes.
And it's such a tension. And so some of them, and I'd love to unpack this with you, is like the themes of like, we want like wholehearted living. And even if you're a believer, like following Jesus is vulnerable. And but there's one hand, like we want vulnerability, but we also need protection. Then there's the big one that a lot of people have to work out, which is like, how do I rest but be productive? Faith versus certainty, courage versus comfort. Brené, you and I were both listening to Brené Brown and Adam Grant talk about the paradox of freedom, and in order to have freedom, you need discipline. Which a lot of people need a reframe in what discipline is because of like it feels controlling, but it's also freeing. So yeah, I'd love for you to sort of like, we could start with what paradox you're living in, or do you have any comments on any of those that I mentioned?
Yeah, so I think like, probably maybe just giving like a bit of a definition. So like a paradox is when two things that are completely opposite are in coexistence and nuance is like the middle ground, the gray in between. And I think you need tolerance of paradox and nuance to live wholeheartedly. And I must say, I think I've always been a balk against the idea of putting any thing in a box, especially myself. My whole life I've been the one to be a bit like, I like to be a bit of a paradox. I think I like to see myself as more than one thing. So maybe inside of me there's always been a bit of an interest in this whole concept around there's more than one thing. And as I've gone on this journey, all I know is that holy moly, so much can exist, coexist, that seems like it should not coexist. Like you can feel two immensely conflicting emotions at the same time.
Yes.
Like you can feel, and yeah, like you said, like this lived experience of, I think if we want safety, I think we want, like safety does come, sorry, I'll backpedal. Our body wants to feel safe, and I think surety gives us a sense of safety. It is false. It's a false sense of safety. When we feel sure, we feel more secure. And so paradox and nuance are very uncomfortable. And if you don't practice being with those things and really looking at it and going, actually, these things just coexist. This is part of the human experience. This is part of the world we live in. And I don't have to reconcile them. I actually don't have to. I'm going to hold one in one hand and hold the other in the other hand and use the word and say, this exists and this exists. And there is probably no reconciling so I can get rid of this one because it makes me uncomfortable and then I just have it and it's simple in front of me. That doesn't occur. And being able to practice and increase your tolerance of the fact that there's always going to be paradox existing in the way that we do our life. So for me, the main one that I think probably comes up is that the tension between two of my core values that can sometimes end up in conflict with one another in a moment. So connection is a value that I have, and authenticity is a value that I have. And there are times where I am grappling with the fact that my authenticity may result in a lack of connection with somebody because we may have different values, we may have different belief systems, we may have different worldviews. And I can feel immensely uncomfortable the entire time I'm in that scenario because I'm just like, I feel like I'm being pulled between these two things that both matter to me and I can't reconcile how to show up and I just feel like a big weird mess. And I think that it's really good to say that that is like really normal. Like it's really normal. That is actually part of living, that we exist in this world where there's conflicting things, and it doesn't mean that there's something wrong or that there's something that's not okay with me, that I can't reconcile that. It just means that these experiences that I'm having are in conflict, and inside of my body, that rumble is confusing and hard and weird, and I don't know what to do with it. And I think that my understanding around paradox means that I think it's using the word and is really powerful. So I love you and I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that like as a mother, if I say to my child, I'm disappointed, they are going to hear, you don't love me. And so I am really trying to bring paradox into parenting. This is just an example by saying, I love you so much and I value you and I think you are a remarkable person. And right now I'm feeling disappointed or, you know, whatever it might be, to bring the fact that these things coexist. And I think that our brain is trying always to be like, but which one is it? Because it feels safer when I have surety. So which one? Do you love me or are you disappointed? And as we can like bring the stretch inside of ourselves to practice this tolerance of nuance and sitting with paradox, it actually allows our nervous system to find more rest when we are faced with the inevitability of having paradox in our like experience.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think we quickly press the easy button, which is like all or nothing thinking. Like, absolutely. I'm either all loving and there's no discipline with my kids, or I'm super disciplined and disappointing, like disappointed in my children.
Yes.
And that's like, it's like this black and white. And I think even with all this psychological information,
Oh, yeah. We
can be like, oh my gosh, we're so afraid of messing up our kids. Mm. And it's like, then all the discipline goes out the window. Yes. And all the like, hey, this is bad behavior. You can't run the show.
Yes. Yeah. And I definitely transparent, this is a struggle that I struggle with a lot because you want to raise great children and you want to give them like all the tools to feel like they, you know, just to move through life. But there's so much out there that you get into a moment and you're like, oh, it's like information overload right now. I have like all the things that I could or should do. And now I'm just like, what's going on? But I think like even if you don't have a tolerance for paradox, like the one example I gave earlier of like wanting to be authentic and wanting to have connection. And there are people in my life that I know when I'm with them, that rumble is also coming into that interaction. And I'm like, and it would be very, very easy for me to, rather than be able to tolerate that feeling, cut those people out entirely from my life. And I think that that is where this like living wholehearted means being willing to have that discomfort.
Yes.
And sit in the like, well, I'm going to remain authentic here. And the connection might ebb and flow. And there could be moments of awkwardness. But authenticity also means I'm not going to armor up. And I'm not going to become abrasive. Because I think like I probably tend to, in my authenticity, I'm going to put that in little quotation marks, when there's a challenge, because authenticity is probably my bigger value, I can lean into like defensiveness or abrasiveness, but that actually isn't authenticity, because at the core, I want to love people. I want to see and people compassion. And compassion. Like these are also values that I have. So like when I'm tipping into these, like what Brené Brown calls near enemies, they're like, you know, it's like a sheep in wolf's clothing, like it's masquerading as the thing, but really it's not the real thing. Mm-hmm. And I can sense that I'm out of alignment and that feels really uncomfortable. If I didn't understand, it's because of the paradox that I'm sitting in, where I'm breaching maybe connection and authenticity and it's really hard and I don't know what to do. And now my body's tipped into this other weird thing that I feel really unaligned by because I'm being a bit abrasive or I'm being a bit defensive. But like when all of that's happening and I leave, rather than spiraling in self-hatred and shame and self-criticism, the self-compassion would be, it makes sense. It actually makes sense that I was defensive. It's hard to navigate. It's really hard to navigate paradox. That felt weird. I didn't show up how I wanted to and I value authenticity and now I'm disappointed in myself, but it actually makes a lot of sense that I didn't show up then, because if I did, I didn't know how to do it in a way that still kept connection, and that's confusing. And, you know, like all of that comes back around to like, it's messy. Living wholehearted is messy. And we have to like have this knowledge around paradox and nuance to realize that that means that you don't get to show up perfectly authentic or wholehearted everywhere you go. Yes. Because the world's a messy place and like we're all very different.
You don't know what you're having come at you is like, especially when you're out living in the world, you don't know if like your values are always going to align with someone, but it's like, how do you keep love on towards yourself and towards the other person, but not go into people pleasing or performative?
And I think the tolerance.
Compromising yourself.
Yeah. And like the tolerance that you probably will. You probably will go into those things. Like, and because I've been such a fawner and had so much codependent, like such healthy codependent relationships throughout my life, I have a big like no response when I sense that I'm fawning. And so then I And then I swing really, really far into the other way. Like I'd rather be horrible than fawn.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather fight than fawn. Like, and and I'm having to probably recently really sit in that, because it is a tricky one. And pendulum swinging, I think we want to be like, I don't want to be like this on this side anymore. And so I think what we do is we do swing the entire other way before we find our balance somewhere in the middle. And you never land in the middle. You're always just doing a bit of a swing between one and the other. And sometimes you hit the sweet spot in the middle and you're like, that was great. And then I think a lot of factors come into that. Have you had rest? Are you self-compassionate? Are you like, is your bandwidth there? Are you in a regulated space? All these things. Sometimes we just hit the sweet spot and we just show up and it's like, wow, that's who I would love to be every moment of every day. But like realistically, it's not it's not real. You don't get to. And wholeheartedness means that you embrace the fact that that is the way it is, I think.
Yeah. I love that you touched on, and we'll sort of close up the conversation. There's so much more we will chat about. You'll have to come back on. But the concept that Brené talks about is the near enemy of things. Mm-hmm. And they talk about, you know, far enemy. If connection is, you know, she talks about far enemies and near enemies. Yeah. So the far enemy of connection would be disconnection or like, abandonment.
Yeah.
But the near enemy of connection is control, she says.
Yes.
Which is kind of, you see that a lot in family dynamics of like, we're family, so you have to come to this event.
Yes. Because we value connection.
Yeah.
But it's actually control. Yeah.
Control.
Yeah.
And so I think like, what are some other near enemies? Because I think this is really important, because even in like growing up in the church, serving is really important and I think is so important, and being generous. But the, what is it? I think she says the far enemy of generosity would be selfishness and not helping people. But I might be butchering this, but I think she says the near enemy of generosity is, I don't know.
She says self-sacrifice, I think, or like,
like being a martyr.
Being a martyr, like it's, and because it's performative and it's more about what you others are seeing rather than actual like core desire for generosity. It's like, and it looks on the outside like the same thing. And I think the difference is that on the inside it feels immensely different. Like one is coming from a place of wholeheartedness. And one is coming from a place of performance or people pleasing or perfectionism or just like a false belief system that is driving, that's an external factor, not an internal one, or like not from a core place. It's just an innocent
place. Yes.
And like, I know one of my favorite ones, I think that I've heard of, that Brené talks about, is that the near enemy of compassion is pity, or of empathy is pity. And I think that that really resonated for me when I was learning self-compassion.
Yes.
Because they, if it's pity, it's very, very different. It's very like, woe is me, I'm a victim. And
I love that you're bringing this up.
Yeah. That doesn't lean towards like healing.
Yes. But even like, because I have been on the other side, and I've probably done this to people too, is like someone thinks that they're showing you compassion because you're going through a hard time, but they're actually showing you pity. Mm. It's almost like some people I notice, if I share honestly, like something hard I'm going through, I can feel them go, oh,
well, they're there.
Yeah. And it's, and it, or it's kind of like there's a lot behind. It's not compassion, which is like real, like there's nothing, it's kind of, compassion is so pure. It's about generosity of holding space.
Yeah.
Whereas like pity is kind of like, oh, if you're going through a hard thing, I don't want to talk about your hard things because I can't sit with my own pain. So, yeah. Oh, that's hard.
Yes.
Like, you know.
And so, compassion has more of a me too or I see you energy. Yeah. And pity has like a ew energy.
Yeah.
Like yeah. coming from somewhere behind it. And when it's turned yeah. on yourself, like if we're talking self-compassion.
Yeah.
Like I think that. The differentiation, is that a word? I don't yeah. know. Maybe just made yeah. it up.
Yeah. yeah.
Like that you make is self-compassion is I see you and I'm yeah. with you. And mm. pity is it's like a woe is me.
Or poor you.
Poor you. Yeah. Poor yeah. you. I can't believe that would happen to you. And, yeah. and it just like there's no agency bringing, no life giving, no yeah. affirming, no hope attached yeah. to pity. And yes. But they can sound, you can use the same words for both probably.
Yes.
And they can look the same and sound the same. So that's that near enemy. Yeah. I was trying that's to think good. Like what was, because I was thinking, well, what's the near enemy of authenticity? If my values authenticity, yes. I think like the far enemy would be like being fake, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, self-abandonment, I think, at a core. So like authenticity versus self-abandonment would for me be like the near yeah. and far. So what's close to authenticity as a near enemy? And I was like, I guess it's just that fake being real, but you're not really being real. I don't know yeah. if there's a word for it. Like I can't think of what it would be. I don't know.
It feels like I think of a time where me and my friends, we would just like gossip and like drink wine and talk crap about people and we're being authentic mm. and we're being real.
Yeah.
But then when I looked into the research, like actual real authenticity is who you are at your purest yes. form. So who your identity is in Christ, like yes. like your truest, most innocent, pure self is. Mm. So it doesn't mean that like you don't have those real moments. Like you and I, before we got on the call, we had some real moments, mm. but we weren't villainizing, we weren't mm. trash talking, and we actually weren't talking from pain. We were just mm. talking about like, life. Yeah, it's really hard in these moments. Yeah. Like we were being authentic, but we weren't trash talking.
Yes. And I think that like probably cockiness, bravado.
Yes.
Those things are like near enemies of authenticity because it's like, what? I'm just being myself. Like,
yeah.
you know, and, but there's a shield and yeah. authentic people, if you're really authentic, if you're in your authenticity, you don't need a shield because mm-hmm. you see your own value and we only yeah. have shields up when we are afraid of being hurt. Those shields go up because of fear and shame and other things, you know? So I think that yeah. if you've got a shield, it's probably not authenticity.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said something before. It made me think of something. I don't know. It's gone now.
I don't know. Trash talking people. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But
I love that you're saying it's like a shield. Cynicism is a shield.
Yes.
Like, you know.
And people can think like, well, that's just what I think. And like yeah. you think that that's being you, but like probably at the core, if you go back. You're hurt. There's hurt. That's your hurt talking.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I wanted to say. Like when we were talking about being authentic, like I think there needs having a because I've got faith, because I have my belief about being created by God on purpose, by design.
Yeah.
And I think that if you believe that you aren't, like I think for me, being able to lean into wholehearted living and lean into my own authenticity was when I could see like God like thought about what he was doing when he made me.
Yeah.
And he put me together like a little recipe.
Yes.
And he was like, oh, I'm going to put a bit of this. I'm going to put a bit of this. And then he made it and he was like, that's amazing.
Yes.
And he made it. And I think if you can like get that sunk, like really sunk in, because like there's so much religiousness that tells us that we're just like horrid,
yeah.
I think. And for people yeah. in the church, there's this, like they like to say that there's not shame, but I do. I think there's so much shame around the way yeah. that we think we should see ourselves, this pious way of seeing ourselves, yeah. because that will then turn us to repentance. But I think that like the core of seeing that our that we're created on purpose, beautifully by design, and when God made yeah. us, he was like, that is amazing. What I've yeah. just created is so beautiful, precious, worthy of love, and at its core is amazing. And all the pain and all the things that come in that get in the way of that, that's where the turning from and the yes. sanctification and the repentance occurs. It's because of all of that. But strip yeah. it all away, at the core, you are just an incredible created being. And I think yeah. that what we're talking about is living from a place where you see yourself the way that God sees you, at a design
yes.
creation level.
Yeah.
From that, going, I know I'm not showing up that way.
Yeah.
I know I'm a mess. I know that there's things inside of me that are showing up, that are messy, that are hurting people, you know, and I'm going to have compassion on that. I'm going to turn towards the Father in that. I'm going to have grace. I'm going to move to growth and like see where what needs changing, but I'm going to believe of myself who I actually am at a creation
yes.
level, and I want to yeah. live from that place, not yeah. from the rest of it. And I think like if I was going to say what is wholehearted, I think it's like seeing yourself through the lens of who you actually are.
Yes.
Underneath all the layers.
Yeah. Because I think also there can be a humanistic, the self can become an idol,
yes.
like where it's all about, there's a really, really, it's a bit scary. And I'm like, I don't want to be God. Like,
no.
you know, and I think there's this beautiful, in Psalm 139, I believe it is, it talks about God's thoughts towards you outnumber the grains of sand. And so when you think about all the, like, even if you were to pick up a handful of sand, for us, you and I, to just sit there and count all the little grains of sand, like that would take a long time. And when you think about the sand on the seashore, like it's safe to say that God's obsessed with you.
Yes.
He's thinking about you a lot
yes.
and he has a lot of thoughts towards you. And I think that's why it's like so powerful when we can unplug from the world, and why we can actually live in that paradox of like, actually, God's obsessed with me. like he thinks about me a lot and I can tap into that for connection rather than have my life source plugged into yeah. this person I've deemed has authority on something.
Yes.
You know,
and so, God sees me under all the mess that I show everyone else.
Yes.
Like God yes. sees, God knows, God, yes. like, you know, he sees all my story, my generational trauma, my,
yes.
like he sees all of that, and he sees inside it all and goes, Chris, I see you, there you are.
Yeah.
Who I yeah. designed. It's amazing. It's beautiful. And like his whole like sanctification process is to return us to that.
That purest of who we are.
And so I think that like rather than going from that top down, shame, 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 I need to change, I need to do better, I need to live authentically, quote unquote, or like bolster myself so that I can be amazing or whatever it might be, like, it's turning back to like a who we actually are at the core
yeah.
and
yeah.
just returning to that and returning to, you know, that. And I think having faith for me helps me do that, because I can come back to the yeah. way that I feel God sees me.
Yeah, and I think because he first loved, and that's what teaches
yes.
us. It's not we're trying to conjure up love for ourselves, like he's love. And so we're just learning how to become really good receivers, mm-hmm. you know, of the love of God that's mm-hmm. so wide and deep and
And that allows us then to face the things that need to be changed in our life and actually move through and do it, because when we're doing it, it's like there's love available while we're messy. Yeah.
Yes, while we're figuring things out.
Yeah.
Yes, this is so beautiful. And I think, like living wholehearted is really, about really, I think Brené's definition of wholehearted is worthy now, not if, when, but it's like you're worthy of love and belonging now, not when you perform or when you produce. And when you cut, that's your starting place. It's like productivity can flow from that. You know, relationships flow from that already loved place, and generosity can come from that place. But I'm just going to have you back on because we could keep talking. Oh, we didn't even get through all the points.
I know. I could talk about all this stuff forever. So
yes,
more than happy to come back.
Yeah. So you guys should go follow Chris on Instagram. I'm going to put the link there because you always have beautiful, wise, just life anecdotes. And I think they're my favorite because it just feels real practical to talk about, like you're in the midst of life and giving some practical wisdom. So we'll have to link that. But thanks for coming on today. This has been so much
fun. Thank you. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you. Awesome.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.